Views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Israel carried out a pre-dawn missile strike inside Iran on Friday local time, U.S. media reported, citing unnamed U.S. officials. The reports by networks ABC, CBS, and NPR did not provide further detail about the location or target of the apparent missile strike. The AP's Ben Thomas reports that Iranian media are reporting explosions across the country.
Iran has fired air defense batteries across several provinces after reports of explosions near the city of Isfahan. That word from the state-run news agency. One government official suggests sites may have been targeted by drones. The Israeli military did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Iran also grounded commercial flights in Tehran and across areas of its western and central regions. The reports come amid high tensions following Iran's unprecedented missile and drone attack on Israel. Isfahan is home to a major airbase for Iran's military, as well as sites associated with its nuclear program. I'm Ben Thomas.
The United States on Thursday effectively stopped the United Nations from recognizing a Palestinian state by casting a veto in the Security Council to deny the Palestinian Authority full membership of the world body.
The results of the vote is as follows. 12 votes in favor, 1 vote against, 2 abstentions. The draft resolution has not been adopted owing to the negative vote of a permanent member of the Council.
The United States says an independent Palestinian state should be established through direct negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and not through UN action. The Palestinians are currently a non-member observer state, a de facto recognition of statehood that was granted by the UN General Assembly back in 2012. This is VOA News. More than 100 Columbia University students in New York were arrested Thursday, culminating months of an on-and-off protest on campus since October 7th when the war between Israel and Hamas began. Columbia has seen numerous protests with students voicing their support for Palestinians and against Israel's bombing of Gaza that has resulted in the deaths of about 33,000 Palestinians, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. The arrests were authorized by the university's president a day after she testified at the U.S. House of Representatives hearing on the school's response to anti-Semitism. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports some Republican leaders are moving ahead with plans to pass a foreign aid package which could cost House Speaker Mike Johnson his job.
Johnson has a plan for advancing the package that's been held up since October and is shrugging off threats from some Republicans to yank the Speaker's gavel if he does.
You do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may.
While Democrats like Jim McGovern say it's long past time.
And our allies have been waiting and waiting and waiting.
It's becoming clear Johnson will need Democrat help to not only pass the bills, but keep his job. Some have said they will help vote down any motion to oust Johnson. Other Republicans, like House Foreign Affairs Chair Michael McCaul, say approving the aid is vital.
We are at a real pivotal point in history.
He says scenes of people fleeing Ukraine evoke Hitler's rise to power.
This is 1939 all over again.
Saga. Magani, Washington.
AP correspondent Karen Chalmers now reports on a disputed crime operation in England. We're going to have that story coming up for you in the next hour. Meantime, AP correspondent Norman Hall reports 12 jurors have been picked for Donald Trump's hush money trial.
And the court has quickly turned to selecting alternate jurors. Rapid progress propelled the case closer to opening statements and weeks of testimony in a case charging the ex-president with falsifying business records to suppress stories about his sex life in the final days of the 2016 election. The jury includes a sales professional, a software engineer, an English teacher, and multiple lawyers. The case centers on $130,000 Trump's lawyer and fixer Michael Cohen paid to porn actor Stormy Daniels. Trump faces 34 felony counts. He denies any wrongdoing. I'm Norman Hall.
And the World Health Organization has approved a new version of a widely used cholera vaccine that could help address a surge in cases that has depleted the global vaccine stockpile. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, April 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya is mourning the death of its Chief of Defense Forces and nine other senior military personnel.
For me, as the Commander-in-Chief of the Kenya Defense Forces, it is a tragic moment for the Kenya Defense Forces fraternity, and it is a most unfortunate day for the nation at large.
Botswana churches oppose a gay rights proposal. Hospitals in eastern DRC face vaccine shortages. South Sudan assures South African President Ramaphosa that elections will take place this year.
Elections will take place as is scheduled this year. His Excellency Cyril Ramaphosa, when he was in the country, he met all the political parties. He also met one-to-one with Dr. Riek Machar, also one-to-one with His Excellency Thabo Mbeki Nayadi.
A rhino poaching in Namibia on the rise in the first quarter of 2024. The story plus Samson Umali Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya is mourning the death on Thursday of its Chief of Defense Forces, General Francis Ogola, and nine other senior military personnel. They had been inspecting the North Rift region where the military is conducting an operation against banditry when their helicopter crashed. President William Ruto has declared 3 days of national mourning beginning today, April 19th.
This is a very sad moment, a moment of great sadness. For me, as the Commander-in-Chief of the Kenya Defense Forces, it is a tragic moment for the Kenya Defense Forces fraternity, and it is a most unfortunate day for the nation at large. Our motherland has lost one of her most valiant generals. We have also lost gallant officers, servicemen and women. The demise of General Ogola is a painful loss to me, and certainly the sorrow we all feel about this passing on is shared by all of the people of Kenya, and most especially the KDF fraternity. A distinguished four-star general has fallen in the course of duty and in the service of country. I convey my deepest condolences to all families that are grieving this untimely loss, and our mourning nation as well. May the Almighty God rest their souls in peace and grant their families fortitude at this time of very deep sorrow. I also wish quick recovery to the two injured soldiers in this accident who are now in hospital. The Kenya Air Force has constituted and dispatched an air investigation team to establish the cause of the air crash. In honor of the life and the distinguished military career of the fallen general who lost his life not just while in office but in active military duty, the nation will observe a period of 3 days of mourning commencing tomorrow, the 19th of April, 2024. During this time of national mourning, the Kenya flag, the Kenya Defense Forces flag, the East African Community flag, and flags of all formations of the military shall fly at half-mast in the Republic of Kenya and in Kenya missions abroad.
Kenyan President William Ruto addressing the nation Thursday on the deaths of the Chief of Defense Forces, General Francis Ogola, and nine other military personnel. On Thursday, South Sudan Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Relations says his government has assured South African President Cyril Ramaphosa that South Sudan will hold its first election since independence at the end of this year. President Ramaphosa, the chair of the African Union appointed high-level ad hoc committee on South Sudan, concluded a 3-day visit to Juba on Thursday. The opposition, led by First Vice President Riek Machar, has said that the country is not prepared to hold free, fair, and credible elections because the government is far behind in implementing the revitalized peace agreement. Foreign Minister James Pitia Morgan tells me that the country is on track to implement the agreement, culminating in elections in December.
South Africa is one of the guarantors through the role that was assigned to five African Union member states, known as the C5. And the C5 always have the role to make sure that the revitalized peace agreement was implemented. Yes, the issue of elections is always discussed, and implementation of the revitalized peace agreement is always being discussed whenever a visitor comes to the country, especially South Africa, in that capacity of C5.
As you know, Minister, there's some disagreement between President Salva Kiir, your government, and also the First Vice President Riek Machar. There's an argument that your government has not done enough to provide the necessary means, for example, the resources needed to have the election, but yet you are insisting that the election must take place. What did your president tell President Ramaphosa?
I really don't understand how we insist. The opposition, the point I'm trying to get here is when you say your government. So the government is both our government, both of us with the opposition, we share the same government, and we also share the agreement. And also we share the same responsibilities. The implementation of the revitalized peace agreement was not only the work of the government, it was our work, all of us as parties. You know very well that this agreement ended the lifespan of the revitalized peace agreement in 2023. We were supposed to go for the elections. It was the agreement itself that directs us, and we have to follow it to the letter and spirit, as people always say. And that is why we came up with something called the roadmap. And the roadmap also, they gave 24 months, including the year 2023 up to the year 2024. And the year 2024 is when we are talking about the elections. It is not about we as a government, because here in South Sudan, both government that you call government, or we just better rather call it parties, that let us have another 24 months, which we have now. And these 24 months also are coming to an end this coming December. So the meaning of roadmap, it was a road to urge all of us now to go for elections. So it is not we that you call the government. It was the agreement, all the parties giving themselves 24 months. Then after 24 months, then the country had to be taken for elections. That is what it is.
So, Minister, are you telling me that your government, as you say, that President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar assure the South African president that the election will take place in South Sudan as scheduled for this year?
Exactly. Elections will take place as is scheduled this year. His Excellency Cyril Ramaphosa, when he was in the country, he met all the political parties. He also met one-to-one with Dr. Riek Machar. And then he also had one-to-one with His Excellency the President, Salva Kiir. That is it, because now this is what the agreement says. All the political parties in South Sudan are accountable to this agreement, and the final stage will come in December. So we are going according to the stages of the agreement.
James Pitia Morgan is South Sudan Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Relations. A coalition of churches in Botswana has voiced its opposition to Parliament's latest effort to amend the constitution to include gay rights. In 2019, Botswana's High Court struck down sections of the constitution that criminalize same-sex relations. This week, the country's National Assembly began another effort to amend the constitution. Nkundise Dube reports from Habaruni.
Botswana's Minister for State, President Kabo Moroeng, introduced a constitutional amendment bill for the first reading Wednesday. Among proposed amendments is the inclusion of a clause that would protect and prohibit the discrimination of intersex persons and persons with a disability. However, churches are opposed to the inclusion of gay rights in the constitution. Abraham Kidisang is a pastor at the Apostolic Faith Mission, a church that issued a statement denouncing the move to amend the constitution.
As the Apostolic Faith Mission in Botswana, we express our grave concerns regarding the tabling and ultimate debate by Parliament of these proposed amendments without the benefits of the people's engagement and contribution. This provision portends grave threat for our Christian way of life. our democracy and indeed our republic as we have known it over the many decades.
In 2019, Botswana's High Court decriminalized same-sex relations after a legal challenge. The government then proposed a bill before Parliament in July of last year to incorporate gay rights into the constitution, but hundreds of opponents protested the development. Kitisang says the church is right to challenge the proposed changes despite the court's 2019 pronouncement.
Amongst the disturbing provisions in the Constitution Amendment Bill 2024, number 4 of 2024, which threatens to destroy the cardinal structure of family life at the heart of Botswana's cherished Christian way of life through the bringing of intersex legal provision that seeks to change the boundary male and female structure of our society established and enacted by the Almighty God.
The lesbians, gay and bisexuals of Botswana Lekka People Group supported the court challenge in 2019. Lekka People Chief Executive Tato Moruti says the constitutional amendments are about protecting human rights and are not a religious issue.
The nation must separate religious beliefs from human rights matters. This issue of decriminalization is a human rights matter. It is not a religious matter. It is an issue that is concerned with reducing systematic disadvantages on other people, especially the LGBTI persons.
The government filed a challenge against the 2019 judgment, but an upper court, the Court of Appeal in 2021, upheld the initial ruling. Moruti says members of the National Assembly have a duty to protect disadvantaged communities.
As an international beacon of democracy, it's very important that as Botswana, we must recognize that this democracy also includes the minority groups such as members of the LGBTI community. It is important for legislators to remember that their democratic oath is to protect those who are not able to speak for themselves, including members of the LGBTI community.
Before the Botswana courts decriminalized homosexuality, the offense was punishable by up to 7 years in jail. Homosexuality remains illegal in most African countries, with some, like Uganda, imposing stiff penalties, including the death sentence. Mkondi Sidube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 19th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, specifically in the Beni and Butembo regions, parents are finding it hard getting vaccines for their children. Healthcare providers report that vaccines have been in short supply for several months, leaving thousands of children unvaccinated. Parents are calling on authorities to quickly resolve the situation. Zanetti Zaide reports from Goma.
In the town of Butembo, vaccination programs have come to a stop. The head nurse of the Makasi Health Area, Kambale Wangahikia, confirms the absence of vaccines in certain areas of North Kivu province. He says they are missing several vaccines, such as the one that fights pneumonia and helps children fight coughs, and also the vaccine that fights meningitis and mumps. He says that all children born and unborn are therefore still at risk. This situation creates frustrations for breastfeeding women. One mother, Kasuki, is worried because her infant son has not yet received the BCG vaccine against tuberculosis. She says she has a four-month-old baby, but he's having trouble getting BCG and other vaccines. She went to the hospital four times and couldn't find anything. The doctors gave her several appointments, but when she arrived, she could hardly find anything. She's worried that her baby will catch serious diseases. Another mother, Stephanie, says she made several trips to health facilities to have her children vaccinated. It was only last week, she says, that her son received his first dose of vaccine. She tells us about the fear she felt. She says she felt very bad because the vaccine she had been looking for a long time was very important for her child, because if he didn't get it, he would be exposed to disabilities and diseases when he grew up. She says that the health authorities should force themselves to bring in the vaccines, because this shortage could cause problems for the children later on. Kasoki Defros, a nurse at Beni's University Clinic, says that not vaccinating children has consequences for the physical health of newborns. She says that local authorities are working hard to respond to this shortage. She says that if children aren't vaccinated against polio, for example, they risk becoming weak and their muscles won't be strengthened. She says the authorities intend to respond to the shortage soon. According to officials from the Beni Health Zone, which oversees dozens of hospitals in the region, over 1,000 children are waiting to be vaccinated in several towns in the Beni and Butembo region. Zanem Nitizaidi, VOA News, Goma, in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Environmentalists in Namibia have accused the local wildlife officials of hiding the real extent of rhino poaching in the Etosha National Park, which holds the highest concentration of black rhinos in the world. The Ministry of Environment recently acknowledged that rhino killings at the park quadrupled during the first quarter of 2024. Vitalio Angula has more from Windhoek, Namibia.
Namibian police apprehended two rhino poaching suspects on Sunday for the killing of an adult female black rhino and a medium-sized male calf black rhino at the Etosha National Park waterhole earlier that day. The two were found in possession of four rhino horns with an estimated value of $55,000. The park has seen a steep increase in rhino poaching, with 28 rhinos killed during the first 3 months of the year compared to just seven in 2023. Environmental activist and journalist John Kobler attributed the increase in part to a three-week mourning period for the passing of Namibia's president that led to a security lapse by law enforcement officials. But he suspects officials are not disclosing the full extent of the rhino poaching.
When you ask them things like this, they tend to sit on their hands for as long as they can before they make any kind of disclosure. My fear is that it could actually be worse than just 28 rhinos, could be more than that.
A large amount of rhino carcasses were discovered during the annual dewormer exercise undertaken in March. The media is usually invited but were not this year, further fueling concern that police did not want the public to know the real extent of rhino poaching in the area. Police spokesperson Kauna Shikwambi said she could not verify or deny the real extent of rhino poaching at the Etosha National Park and referred all queries to the newly appointed police commander for Etosha, Teopolida Nashikaku. Nashikaku also refused to comment on the extent of poaching in the park.
All I know is that the Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, through the spokesperson of his ministry, has shed sufficient light on the number of rhinos discovered during the dehorning exercise. Now, yes, the ministry has enough scientists with the capacity to establish how long the animal has been dead. Perhaps for now, let me just concentrate on my mandate.
Rhinos are critically endangered, and Namibian authorities have previously said that disclosing the number of rhinos in the national park only puts them in harm's way. That idea is rebuffed by some conservationists who say that organized poachers, because of their high level of sophistication, already know the rhino population, estimated at 6,000 black rhinos and 15,000 white rhinos globally. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Environment, Romeo Mwunda, says the plight of Namibia's rhino population is receiving priority.
Based on the urgency of this situation, the ministry is undertaking an assessment in the Etosha National Park to establish the full extent of this problem. And also, based on that urgency, we have called for an urgent meeting with the security clusters which includes the Namibian police and the NDF, to ensure that we dissect the matter and come up with possible interventions.
In addition to the arrest of the suspects who appeared in court on Tuesday, Namibian police are reaching out to communities and seeking assistance to identify and apprehend more rhino poachers. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has granted clemency to more than 4,000 prisoners. The amnesty coincided with the country's 44th anniversary of independence from white minority rule on Thursday. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CAF Champions League. The semi-finals of the 2023-2024 CAF Champions League will begin this weekend on Saturday, the 20th of April. Al-Hakli of Egypt, TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Osporon Sportive Tunis of Tunisia, and Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa are the four remaining clubs contending for Africa's most prized club football crown. The first leg semi-finals will be played this weekend, with the return leg scheduled for the 25th to the 26th of April 2024. TP Mazembe will face Al-Hakli, while Osporon Sportive of Tunis will play Mamelodi Sundowns. And now to athletics, where South Africa long-distance runner Glenrose Zaba stole the show on Thursday as the Athletics South Africa Senior Track and Field Combined Events and Relay Championships opened in explosive fashion at the Nzuduzi Athletic Stadium in Pietermaritzburg. Zaba kicked hard over the last few laps to beat middle distance specialist Prudence Sikadozo in the women's 5,000 meters final. Zaba completed the race in 15 minutes, 48.44 seconds, with Sikadozo fading in the final lap to take the silver medal in 16 minutes, 02.04 seconds. Kyla Jacobs, who did much of the early front running, ended third in 16 minutes, 03.97 seconds. The marathon world record holder, Kenya's Kelvin Kiptum, will be honored at the London Marathon on Sunday. The 24-year-old died alongside his coach, Rwanda's Gervis Hakazimana, in a car accident in Western Kenya in February. Kiptum was set to compete in this year's London Marathon, where he was looking to win for the second year in a row. The event will begin with a tribute to Kiptum. And staying with Kenya, an array of global medalists will headline the Kipkino Classic, a World Athletics Continental Tour gold meeting in Nairobi this Saturday. Several of the world's best hammer throwers, including world champion Ethan Katzberg, Olympic champion Wojciech Nowicki, five-time world champion Powell Fajek, and world record holder Anita Ludozazek will all be in action on the field. On the track, double world medalist Letsel Tebogo of Botswana will highlight the men's 200 meters. Tebogo, who took 100 meters silver and 200 meters bronze at the World Championships last year, has already had a strong start to the year. He set a world 300 meters best of 30.69 seconds in February, and then followed it up with a 19.94, and then followed it up with a 19.94 seconds clocking over 200 meters.
It's better to play safe and then put the goals for the Olympics.
Africa's fastest man, Ferdinand Omanyala, is enthusiastically looking forward to compete at home in Saturday's fifth edition of the Kipkino Classic. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, April 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Like
their neurotypical peers, women with autism can learn to live independently, build career, start a business, and more. However, understanding their needs is key to their success. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss what success means as autistic women and where it should start. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.